Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What happens when you're a physician and you experience a childbirth-related injury? Are you treated any differently? You're going to hear about that today in this Birth Story episode with Gina. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway-Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 285. Whether it is your first time listening or you have listened before, I am so glad you're spending some time with me today. In today's episode, we have Dr. Gina Yu. Gina is an ophthalmology resident, meaning she's a physician who is training to be an ophthalmologist. She had a birth complication that made her paralyzed in her right leg. It's a complication that can happen to anyone due to poor positioning and nerve compression. It was absolutely terrifying for her, as you might imagine, to wake up from the blur of her birth to find out that she can no longer walk. She wasn't getting great answers as to what was happening and whether or not she would get better, and there wasn't a lot of online information about it either. She really wanted to share her story so that other women who experience this don't have to live silently in fear that they may never be able to stand or walk again. And she wants her story to provide hope and also tips for what to do to recover from a complication like this. I really appreciate Gina coming on to share her story. I actually reached out to her to ask her to be a guest on the podcast because I read an article where she wrote about her story. And it can be hard for us in medicine to speak up about our unpleasant experiences. Sometimes it can feel like we're airing dirty laundry. I know when I first started doing this work online and social media and things like that, the podcast, I had some hesitation about sharing some of the problems and issues within our maternal healthcare system. It's almost like people accuse you of being a traitor, so to speak. But it's so important that we share the truth of what happens, share the truth, both the good and the bad. That is how we are going to be able to make things better and improve our system for everyone. Now, one of the things you're going to hear in the episode is how Gina had to really advocate for herself. And it's really important for you to know how to advocate for yourself. Childbirth education can be really helpful in that regard. In fact, it's absolutely crucial that you do childbirth education so that you are best able to advocate for yourself, particularly for a hospital birth. I have an online option called the Birth Preparation Course, and it has helped thousands of women be able to advocate for themselves during their hospital birth experience. You can check out all the details of the Birth Preparation Course at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. I believe so strongly in childbirth education that if you don't choose mine, choose something because it's really, really important. But of course, I'd love to have you inside the Birth Preparation Course. So again, that's drnicolerankins.com/enroll. Okay, let's get into the birth story episode with Gina. Thank you so much, Gina, for agreeing, and Dr. Yu, I should say, for agreeing to come on to the podcast. I am so excited to have you come share your story.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I think it's such a huge inspiration to have a podcast like this. So to be on it, it's really an honor. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So why don't you start off a bit by telling us about yourself and your family?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in Michigan in a pretty small town called Saline. It's really close to Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan is. Uh-huh. And during my my time in Michigan, I spent almost all of my time helping my family cook fried chicken. We had this fried chicken restaurant that was family owned and operated, a small business. Yeah, it was called Family Fried Chicken. In Ypsilanti, it still exists. it was amazing because it was like soul food every single day, which was fantastic.
Right.
But it also, it was a lot of hard work. So mm-hmm. it definitely taught me the value of working hard, seeing my parents well into past their 60s, working from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. and like really physically demanding, right. mentally demanding right. jobs is it was a true inspiration for sure. And so I was actually also at that restaurant that my dad, he accidentally injured his left eye while cutting the branches outside the restaurant. And he at first thought it was just going to be like a simple procedure to fix it. But then it ended up being a lot more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. And now the eye is ticeable, which just means that it's like shrunken and kind of like a physical reminder of a really difficult time in his life. And he's not able to see out of the eye at all.
Okay.
And so that really inspired me to want to go into medicine because I wanted to see if there's any way that I'd be able to help him or at least kind of figure out what happened.
Right.
And that kind of led to this journey of going into medicine, mm-hmm. getting into medical school, which was amazing that that happened. And now I'm currently doing my ophthalmology training at Stanford.
I love that. What a beautiful story. It's always interesting to me. The more I talk to people, the more I see how so many people, what they do comes from their own lived and personal experiences. And I love when I see people who are able to take that and turn it into something positive. So that's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And you also have a little one, which is what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes. Our little Jane. She is awesome.
All right. Well, let's talk about Jane. So let's, in order to understand the birth and I should say up front, we're really going to focus a lot on what happened with you postpartum because you had a rare complication and things it was a challenge. But in order to understand kind of what went into that, I always like to talk about what happened during the pregnancy and the prenatal care piece. So what was your pregnancy and prenatal care like? Did you see a physician, a midwife? How was that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was seen by a physician and most of my pregnancy was pretty straightforward. I had insulin resistance. And so I had to have a continuous glucose monitor and check my sugars. And then towards the end of the pregnancy, there were a couple episodes of some abnormal vaginal bleeding of unclear reasons.
Okay.
And so my OB was kind of telling me, like, I think you should maybe take it a little bit easier because I was also doing residency and residency already, as we know, can be kind of tough even when you aren't like 39 weeks pregnant. And so like working like the 80-hour weeks and we have call overnight and our call can be pretty busy because we have to cover four hospitals and we're driving all around, et cetera. And so I think all of that combined probably made for the pregnancy to be a little bit more difficult towards the end.
Sure.
And I do have to say my residency program was like absolutely incredible about the whole thing too, because towards the end, my OB was saying, like, I think you should really take it easier, like not bed rest, but at least like take it easier. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't actually going to even mention it to my residency program just because I already felt, I don't know. You have like that guilt.
Yes.
Of,
right.
Yeah. Right. Of taking time off and everything. So I already felt that. And then my program director and the attendings I was working with, they like could tell something was wrong and they like talked to me more about it. And they were actually the ones that encouraged me to like, hey, you should really listen to your body, listen to your OB.
Okay.
And so I was able to take a little bit of time off. But so for the most part, pregnancy was pretty straightforward.
Okay. Okay. And you were happy with the prenatal care you received?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was. Yeah. I had one OB to begin with, and then she actually ended up leaving on maternity leave. So then I had another OB, and both of them were really great. They really listened to the different concerns that I had and were very, very knowledgeable, which was great.
Good, good, good. So it's hard to answer this question because you only know being pregnant as a physician and being in training, but do you think that that impacted the way you approached or thought about pregnancy?
Yeah. It's a really, really good question. I do think that it did. Cause, you know about the scary things that can happen, I guess. And so it's really hard not to fixate on that or to assume or just predict that that's going to happen to you. And so every little thing that doesn't seem textbook, you think to yourself like, oh, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And so I do feel like it added an extra level of concern and anxiety.
Sure. Sure. I can understand that. As someone who used to ultrasound myself.
Oh my God. That'd be so horrible. Yeah. I would totally do that if I knew about this thing. I would totally do that.
Yeah. Oh goodness. So what did you do, if anything, to prepare for your birth?
Yeah, so the hospital that I gave birth at had these courses mm-hmm. that you could take ahead of time. And it was everything from like how to install a car seat mm-hmm. afterwards to what your birth plan would be or what to watch out for, things to think about in preparation for delivery. So I was able to take those courses, which I felt was really useful, especially as a first time being pregnant, sure. delivering, et cetera. I just wanted to be able to kind of get as much information as I could. So I ended up using those courses, which is great.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And what were some things that you wanted for your birth?
I think ultimately what I wanted was just to have a healthy baby mm-hmm. and like as much of a healthy delivery as possible. And I wanted my husband, who is incredible and super supportive, I wanted him there. And my parents were also visiting, so mm-hmm. they were able to come too. Just to have like a as smooth of a process as yeah. possible with the people that I love.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Was there anything that you were particularly afraid of about giving birth?
I think, having gone through my OB rotation mm-hmm. in med school, I have seen some pretty very painful, obviously, births, but also the vaginal tears that happen mm-hmm. afterwards or things like that. I was concerned about that. And it's actually interesting. So before everything happened, I remember briefly looking up like how safe is an epidural and mm-hmm. like how safe is that portion?
Right.
What are the chances of becoming paralyzed or the chances of things happening sure. and going wrong? Sure. And I looked at that super briefly because mm-hmm. it was like extremely rare, very unlikely to happen. And so then I kind of just wrote it off and I was like, oh, that's not going to happen to me.
Gotcha.
And so, mainly the things that I was more concerned about was what I had seen more commonly during my OB rotation, which were like vaginal.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So then let's talk about what was your labor and your birth like?
Yeah. So the labor and birth was surprisingly a lot more straightforward than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Like I thought it was going to be super duper painful uh-huh. and like horrible experience the entire time. But the labor part was difficult until I had the epidural. And
gotcha.
Then once the epidural kicked in, it was actually pretty smooth sailing. Like the actual delivery itself, I was in active labor for like 47 minutes and then our baby came out. And
Okay, wait. Yeah. Let's back up because this is your first baby. Were you induced or did you go into labor on your own?
Yeah, sorry. I was induced.
Okay.
And so once I was induced, it was like very, very quick after
Okay. Did you decide that you wanted to be induced?
Yeah. So it was partly a decision with the OB. So the way that the hospital that I gave birth at uh-huh. works is that the OB that I was working with during my entire pregnancy mm-hmm. was not the OB that actually delivered. It was whoever the OB was on call.
Right.
And so the OB that I worked with during the labor and delivery process, uh-huh. She had noticed that there were some variable D cells on the fetal monitoring. Uh-huh. And so she was saying like, I think we should induce. I think it'd be safer at this point to induce. So it was, yeah.
Okay. And how far along were you in the pregnancy? Like how many weeks?
Yeah, I was 40 weeks at that point too. So it was fine.
Gotcha. So what was the induction process like for you?
Yeah, it was painful.
It was.
Like I guess because everything that happened uh-huh. These parts I don't know if the complication that happened didn't end up happening uh-huh. I think that these parts would have been more highlighted the induction part was pretty painful. I do remember them uh-huh. having to like do inspection or like do examinations uh-huh. and my husband was next to me uh-huh. and he like was basically telling the nurse like maybe we should pause because I was like squeezing his hand because it was so painful and things like that. But the actual after they induced and they did the examination, they were saying like, oh wow, yeah, you seem ready to go.
Okay.
Pretty soon after that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So how was the epidural placement difficult or challenging or anything like that?
I don't think it was. Okay. And that was a question that people had asked me afterwards. Uh-huh. Like, do you feel like there was any sort of shooting pain or mm-hmm. things like that? I do, like, once I had those questions, I remember thinking to myself, like, the only pain that I was really thinking about was the labor pain.
Right.
And so I wasn't really focusing on anything else.
Right.
And so then
right.
I was trying to think to myself, like, was there something that felt wrong during mm-hmm. the epidural? And I really don't think there was.
Gotcha.
I think it was, it seemed like it right. like, and the, it seemed like they were able to place it after one attempt.
Okay.
It didn't seem like there was any other complications from that.
Okay. Okay. And then how long did you push for, you said?
Yeah, 47 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I was really lucky. It was really not that bad. Like, yeah, considering first birth and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it
really yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then did they put her up on your chest? Did you have skin to skin and all of those nice things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did, which is really nice.
Okay. Research shows that peak reproductive years are between the late teens and late 20s. I don't know about you, but when I was in my 20s, I definitely wasn't thinking about starting a family. I was in school, I was training to be an OBGYN, I wasn't yet married, which was important to me to have a family. There are a lot of reasons why you might wait to have children, and that's where Ritual comes in. Their 3-in-1 fertility support was designed in partnership with an OBGYN and a fertility specialist. It uses clinically studied ingredients and clinically studied dosages to support conception outcomes. As an OBGYN, I trust Ritual because they take quality seriously. All of their products are rigorously third-party tested for heavy metals, allergens, and microbes for safety during preconception and pregnancy. The fertility support drink mix is used twice a day. It's sugar-free, it tastes like a light, refreshing lemonade, and the clinically studied ingredients support egg health, promote normal ovulation cycles, provide antioxidant support, and more. And for even more pre-pregnancy support, you can bundle fertility support with Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin. That includes omega-3 DHA, folate, and iron to support key nutrients needed for preconception. Bring the fertility science back to your bedroom with 3-in-1 fertility support from Ritual. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off.
Then postpartum, walk me through what happened and when did you notice that something was not right.
Yeah. So postpartum. So we had delivered our beautiful baby and she was great. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was just like off of that high of having mm-hmm. delivered and everything. Mm-hmm. And then a couple hours later, I could tell that the function was returning and like the feeling and sensation was returning on my left leg. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, great. But I could tell something was wrong in my right side because even though my left leg, it felt like things were kind of waking up and returning back to normal, my right side, nothing was really happening.
Mm.
And I remember like in thinking internally, like just something doesn't feel right. It just, something seems wrong. Mm. And so then I ended up telling the team that I was like, it just doesn't seem normal. Like something right. seems wrong with my other, with my right leg, especially
right.
given everything that's going fine with the left.
Right.
And at first my team was like, okay, like you're still pretty early off of the epidural. It's uh-huh. very, very common for things to come back unevenly.
Right.
Why don't we wait? And at that point, so I delivered around noon. And uh-huh. so they were like, why don't we just wait at least until tonight and see
okay.
if things are progressing or improving.
Okay.
And it was interesting because they actually focused less on this the leg being non-functional mm-hmm. and more on my vitals because my vitals were kind of they said that I was super tachycardic, my heart rate was going really, really fast and my blood pressure was really, really low. So they were focused more on the vital side of things.
Okay.
And
okay.
then they said like, oh, her mood seems different. And so all of that kind of led them to think that it was maybe something more systemic. And so they mm-hmm. were focusing on that. But to me, the reason I feel like I was feeling that way, or like my mood was different and everything, was because I was just thinking and so worried about my leg.
Right.
And like, I could tell, I knew mm-hmm. something was wrong. I knew, even though the team had said like, oh, don't worry about it, I think you're going to be okay, everything's going to be fine. I just like, I had a feeling.
Yeah,
I just knew.
Okay.
So anyways, night comes and still nothing is improving. My left leg at this point is like essentially almost back to normal. Mm-hmm. There's like returning function, and my right leg, still nothing was happening. And
you said you couldn't feel it or you couldn't move it.
Yeah.
Or it was just like dead weight.
Yeah, exactly.
And nothing, like your toes, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So remember just thinking like, I would do anything, like give anything just to have like my tiny little pinky toe give me some sort of response, and nothing was happening. And I just knew something was wrong from that, mm-hmm. from that point. And so I, that night I hadn't heard from my delivering OB yet. And so I was asking the nurse, is she available so we can talk? Cause I figured that if anyone might know what could have happened,
right.
it would be her. And
right.
at least we could kind of like talk it through, or like try to figure out next steps or something. Just
right.
like, I understand she might not know exactly what happened either,
sure.
but at least like try to, she would be the best person.
Cause right.
she
was, yeah, cause she was there. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And so at least try to figure something out. And so anyways, I had asked my nurse was saying, oh, she's busy, but she'll try to come by later tonight. I was like, mm-hmm. fine, no problem. And then more hours came and then still hadn't come. So I asked my nurse again. She said, oh, she'll probably come tomorrow morning. Don't worry about it. Let's see if things will get better by tomorrow morning. Try to sleep it off. And I
right.
said, okay, sure. And yeah, I still remember that night having the most beautiful dream. It was such a wonderful dream.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, take your time.
I had this wonderful, wonderful dream that like everything that happened mm-hmm. didn't actually happen. It wasn't real. Mm-hmm. And I was able to like confidently stand up and walk over to the bassinet for my baby and like, hug
right.
her super close.
Right.
And then my husband was hugging me. We're all
right.
so happy. And like, so like this joyous time, we were super excited. And I remember having the beautiful dream. I'm like, oh, okay. So everything that had happened before wasn't real. This is real.
Right.
Yeah. And then I woke up and then I realized that that wasn't the case. My leg still wasn't working. It wasn't functioning. And it was pretty difficult to have that realization.
Sure.
Yeah. But
I mean, it seems like just obviously the listeners can't see us, but looking at you, that was very vivid. Like it seemed like it was very clear in your mind that's.
Yeah, it was. It was just such a beautiful, like, I think that's what I had imagined.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, imagined everything
right.
was going to be
right.
like, but I mean, obviously, I understand these are things that are out of our control, complications happen, et cetera, but I think that's what I had imagined.
Sure.
And so when I woke up and realized that wasn't the case,
it was just difficult.
Hard. But,
and had they tried to get you up to go to the bathroom? Because usually we try to get folks up to go. What happened?
So when I tried to use the restroom, I couldn't stand or I couldn't walk at all on the leg. And so what they ended up using was this, it was like a, not necessarily a wheelchair, but like
uh-huh.
something where I could like put my knees on it, and then they wheeled me to the restroom, or they would like wheel me to the
okay.
the things like that. Yeah. So that
okay.
was how I was able to go from point A to point B.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
so that morning when I had woke up, I still hadn't spoken to the OB yet. And so then I had asked my nurse, like, do you think she'd be able to stop by just so we can talk a little bit about what might have happened? And
mm-hmm.
then that's when the nurse was saying, oh, actually the OB had left for the night. She went back home. So you're going to speak with the next OB that's on call.
Mm-hmm.
And, hearing that was really hard because I was like, oh man, I wanted to speak with the OB initially.
Right.
Yeah. Who was there, who might be able to answer some questions.
Right.
And so, eventually that OB did, she called me on the phone and
okay.
so we tried to talk through it. And she was saying that, she wasn't sure exactly what happened. It might have been due to positioning.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was just on my right side for too long, maybe a compression injury. And so she was saying, usually these types of injuries, if they do happen, they're very, very rare, but they usually get better.
Right.
And then I was like, do you think it makes sense for me to like see a neurologist or see someone who might be able to kind of pinpoint exactly
sure.
where the injury was so
mm-hmm.
I could try to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, yeah, sure. So they ended up consulting a neurologist. And then they also said, maybe once the neurologist sees you, if there's still an indication for imaging or other studies, then we can go from there. And
okay.
I said, sure, absolutely. That makes
okay.
a lot of sense. Yeah. And then later that morning, I ended up seeing the anesthesiologist, not the one that provided the epidural, mm-hmm. but another anesthesiologist. And they were saying that it was likely a peroneal nerve injury. At that time, they thought it was still a peroneal nerve injury, which it didn't end up being that, but okay. they thought it was.
Right.
And so they were like, since it's a peripheral nerve injury, I don't think it's due to the epidural. Let's see what the neurologist said. And I was like, sure, okay. makes sense.
Okay.
So then I see the neurologist, and the neurologist is like, this seems like it's due to the epidural. And so I was just like getting like all this mixed information.
Right.
Yeah. And right. he was like, I think it's going to get better. Like, this is probably going to get better in 2 weeks. You'll be fine. And I was like, really? Wow. I was pretty amazed by that prognosis because right. nothing had gotten better after right. a day or two already. Okay. And so I was like, 2 weeks? Okay. I mean, if it's going to be 2 weeks, that would be fantastic. That'd right. be great. And then he also was like, since it's due to the epidural, I mean, it's possible that imaging would be helpful.
Okay.
So we may consider getting an MRI, but it's not necessary. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like, if you feel you would like an MRI, I right. think that that's totally reasonable.
Right.
I was like, okay, sure.
Right.
So we get to later in that day, the other OB comes in, the one that wasn't during my delivery, mm-hmm. but the one, the next one on call. And then she kind of like runs through everything that's happened so far. And then she was like, I'll check in on you later in the day to just make sure things are still going okay.
That's right.
Sure. And so then she leaves. And then apparently, like while I was taking a kind of a nap, I was like a little half asleep.
Yeah.
She had come in and to check in on me. And then that's when she was like, oh, I think that I spoke with the neurologist and we don't think that imaging is really indicated at this point. And so then she was like, let's knock at the MRI. And then she had left. And I was kind of like half asleep. I was like, okay, sure. They seem to be on it. So I'll be able to go to sleep
right.
and like
right.
try to think about this more clearly once I am not quite as exhausted. So then I wake up and then I kind of talk to my parents and my husband who were there. And I was like, so I was a little sleep deprived. I was a little sleepy when sure. all this had happened. So like, what was the conversation like? And they're like, oh yeah, they had said that we're kind of just going to continue to watch it right now, not going to do any further studies. And at this point too, I had already kind of messaged some of my friends that are in neurology, neurosurgery, and just to get their thoughts of like, mm-hmm. what could we do? Like, what is happening?
Right.
And they were saying like, the least we could do at this point is probably get an image study, like get an MRI,
right.
just to make sure. Because if it's an epidural and there's a hematoma, at least right. it's something that's curable or like something that they could treat.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess since the team had thought that it was still just a peroneal nerve injury, maybe mm-hmm. that's why they didn't think it was that needed. But mm-hmm. I spoke with the OB that was on call. She came back and I kind of asked her a little bit more about like whether it'd be possible to get an MRI to at least get an answer, an explanation mm-hmm. of whether this is something that is more central, more
right.
treatable.
Right.
Because right now it seems like there was a lot of question marks of like
sure.
why this happened,
right.
what we can do to fix it.
Right.
And so I had talked to her about it. And I was at that point that the OB ended up becoming a little bit more like, I guess, I don't know what the right term, maybe reluctant or like just not quite as patient with the questions that I was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that the MRI was completely not indicated. It was a waste of resources. This isn't a conversation we should have anymore. And then she said, if I still wanted it, then in the reason for study, she was going to write, quote, per patient request, because it is not indicated by this hospital. And then I asked about like why that would be needed or like, what was the reasoning behind that? And she said, well, I'm not sure if it's going to make it so that it's self-pay, but it's not indicated in my perspective. And I don't think the hospital should have to pay for it if you are requesting it, essentially, is what she was saying.
I'm sorry. Okay, maybe you're just about to answer the question, but how in the world did that make you feel? Like,
oh, man. Sorry, just reliving this is
kind of. I don't mean to. I mean, I'm just.
No, not at all. It was just, yeah, it was. I guess it was surprising to have that type of reaction. And also, it was really discouraging because I, at this point, I understand that everyone is confused about what happened and like
right.
it's hard to have these types of difficult conversations, but
right.
I at least was hoping that my team would like have my back or like be able to
sure.
ensure that like I would be getting answers to questions that we all don't know the answers to right now, or at least try our best to do that.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it was at that moment that I realized, hey, like, I need to advocate for myself. Like, this is not something that is going to, like, come, like, I am going to have to, for the sake of my health. And I mean, at this point now, like, I have a brand new baby, and like, I want to make sure that I am healthy for her and everything too. And so I was just thinking, like, maybe in the past, I would have been a bit more I wouldn't have spoken up as much, but I think because of the fact that I have this beautiful brand new baby, I was like, I need to be able to advocate at this point. And I think that's that was the turning point. Like, okay, this is a hospital stay where I'm going to have to ask the questions and advocate for myself, because it just seems like there's going to be a bit of difficulty getting things otherwise.
And you're a physician. You would expect that. I mean, imagine what our patients go through, for God's sake.
Exactly. Like, that is what blew my mind too, because I'm thinking to myself, like, I am so lucky. I have the best support system. I have an amazing training program that's also supporting me. Like, I have a somewhat health literacy in this. I'm definitely not an expert in any of this, but like, at least a little bit of health literacy. And like, I'm able to speak up and ask these types of questions. I can't imagine like the patients that we have who don't have these resources, what they must experience. And like, just like thinking about like my dad's experience as well, and like how, what he must have felt like being ESL and like, we didn't have health insurance, like not being able to have that type of backing and resources. And I had like almost everything in line for me to be able to
and the fact that it doesn't affect her whether or not you get an MRI. It's not affecting her.
I wonder why. Like, there was a point where she even said, like, she actually mentioned the fact that I had quote unquote more knowledge. And she was like, have you seen the studies that people that have more medical backing actually get worse care because they get all these different studies? And I was just thinking to myself, like, is that why? Like, why? I was a little confused. And I mean, I feel bad. I'm sure she had her reasons. It's just the way that they were communicated was maybe it was like partly my sleep deprived mind was like not understanding what was going on, but like just the way that it was communicated made it seem like they weren't on my team, which is really discouraging.
I feel like you're being kind. I think we have a cultural problem in medicine where we don't know how to center the needs of the person in front of us. And we think we know better than they do. And we're not supporting them and helping them make the best choices for themselves. We're imposing what we think is best. And it's just, we have a cultural problem. It's bad in OB and, or it can be, it's not terrible everywhere. And I'm a little soapbox, but it's a problem. Yeah. So, that's my two cents.
Thank you for saying that.
Then what happened? Did you end up getting the MRI? Like, so what happened from there?
Yeah. So from there, I ended up seeing physical therapy and the sessions were essentially like, you can't walk. you can't do anything. Like, so they the later on they gave me one of those braces for my foot, because I had just like, my foot was just not functioning. So it was a complete foot drop. And so they gave me one of those braces and they gave me a walker to try to learn how to walk with everything that happened. And that was another thing too. Like, I remember thinking about, like, how are we going to get home with this?
Yes.
Like, we live in a small one-bedroom apartment. I live on the second floor. Like, we have an elevator. Great. That I'm so thankful for that. Right. But, like, I was just like, how are we going to fit this huge new wheelchair? And, like, how am I going to be able to walk with a walker or a wheelchair through all the, like, to the bathroom or things like that? And I just remember thinking to myself, like, how is this going to all work out? And they were encouraging to like try to get me to be discharged. Uh-huh. And so at first I was really worried and scared because I wasn't sure how we were going to be able to be discharged and comfortably be at home with everything that happened.
Right.
And then I, like, speaking again about our patients, it just like reminds me of the times where when I was on my internal medicine rotation, there would be patients who were really scared and worried about going home. And we tried to provide them with resources to like go to rehab or things like that to be able to safely go home. But I just like, you don't really, I guess, fully understand that concern that a patient would have until you live it. Yeah. Right. And so I was just thinking to myself, like, wow, just remembering all those different times of patients, that how scared they must have felt. But towards, so that last day that I would have been discharged anyways, if it had been a completely normal delivery, towards the end of it, we saw the physical therapist, they gave us the brace. I felt more comfortable about going home. And at that point I just like didn't want to be at the hospital anymore because they gave me as many resources as I could have, which was great. And then we kind of just went home and hoped for the best.
That's just hard that you just had to like kind of, you just go and you're like, okay, well, I hope things turn, and you have this new baby and, you know, you're sleep deprived, all of these things. So then what was it like when you were at home? Like the follow-up, was there follow-up? Yes. Or, like what were all of those things?
Right. Oh, sorry. And I didn't answer your question about whether we got the MRI.
Oh, yes.
So
we
did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we didn't get the MRI. And so when I got home, and I actually had spoken to a nurse about this during my inpatient stay as well. I was thinking like I might end up going to a different hospital just to get connected and see if they think it's worth getting an MRI more urgently and stuff. And so that's what ended up happening. We ended up going to a different hospital. They got the MRI and I was connected with the neurologist. And it was then that they told me actually it wasn't a peroneal nerve damage. It wasn't that peripheral. It was actually sciatic. And so that's why I had like completely loss of function of that right leg, essentially.
How do they think it happened?
Yeah, so it's still not 100% clear, to be honest. Like I met with the neurologist at this other hospital and she's fantastic. She was saying like she's more of an expert in peripheral nerve damage associated with birth complications. And she was saying that it kind of, she's seen patients very similar to mine, very similar types of injuries. And it just happens during the delivery process, just the way that I was lying or just compression of the sciatic nerve had caused this. And then I also met with a neurosurgeon who essentially said the same thing. He thinks that it was during the actual active labor process, like the way that maybe my legs were kind of, caused the I don't know how they were rested.
Like kind of pulled back or.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that caused damage to the sciatic nerve.
Right.
And it's unclear why it was like the right side versus left or what positioning may have caused that issue.
Right.
And it was a really important question for me too, because like for future family planning, like if we want to have another kid at this point, it's so early to even think about. Like I'm still kind of reeling from everything that happened in the delivery.
Right.
And I'm still kind of dealing with that complication, but for future planning, like what could I do differently next time?
Right.
And he essentially was saying, I know it's really hard, but like while you are giving labor, try to be really cognizant of your positioning or like ask the team to be cognizant of it, given everything that's happened. Because he had mentioned that once you have this much damage to the sciatic nerve, then it's never going to be 100% again. Like it's going to, so it's going to be a lot easier to injure it.
Sure.
And the neurologist that I saw, she did some EMG studies looking at the function of the nerve and like if it would ever return back to completely normal. And at that point, she had said that there's actually, instead of it just being the myelin that was damaged, she had noticed there was axonal damage as well. So the actual nerve itself had become really severely damaged. And so that kind of made it more so that it, like what the prognosis was going to be.
Wow. So then how have you been able to get better?
So I, with this new hospital and the team that I had there, they've been able to do all these different studies. So it at least provides a little bit more answers about what I can focus on. And they also like provided resources for supplements and things that I should take, which I found to be helpful. At the same time, I was a little nervous because I'm breastfeeding. So like, I wasn't sure, like how safe that would be. But it seemed like from the different studies, it seemed okay to take these different supplements. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I did. And then also I was so lucky because I got into physical therapy really quickly.
Okay.
And that was all my husband's doing. Like he searched through all the different local physical therapists that would be able to take me right away. Mm-hmm. And we found one who was like specialized in neurology, and the physical therapists that I worked with were amazing. They were fantastic. They're okay. So good. And so that also helped a lot for gotcha. Sure. And then like I mentioned before, but I have the best family right. and like just having them here through all of this supporting was really, really great.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So what is your function like now?
Yeah. Yeah. So now it is a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. I'm able to walk and I'm able to do almost like all activities uh-huh. that I had done before.
Right.
The first time I drove was really emotional for me because I remember when we had exited the hospital, I saw my car, which had gotten me like through med school, resident center, like, right. like so this car has been with yes. me for a while. Yeah. Yes. And I remember yes. thinking to myself, like literally 48 hours ago, I was able to drive this car. And now here I am in a wheelchair. Will I ever drive this car again?
Right.
And like, will I ever be independent again? It just like symbolized a lot to me
right.
being able to drive again. And so that was really, really a happy moment for me being able to drive. And I spoke with my neurologist and neurosurgeon. They had cleared me now to be able to do surgeries as well, because cataracts, so in my ophthalmology training, we get to do a lot of cataract surgeries, and mm-hmm. cataract surgery requires two pedals, so both your feet being functional.
Gotcha.
And so that was another huge concern of mine, not being able to do that mm-hmm. moving forward. And they cleared me for that, which was great. So really the thing that I am working on at this point is just the pain associated with it. So okay. like I kind of always have this underlying paresthesia, pins and needle burning sensation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes certain activities make it worse, like sitting makes it worse.
Right.
And I think it's tough too when I'm like trying to crouch down mm-hmm. and pick up my baby mm-hmm. and like play with her and things mm-hmm. like that. And then I just get these pangs of pain. And then I have to stop, unfortunately, for that.
Right.
But I'm just so grateful that I'm able to at least have the function back.
Sure.
That was a huge component.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how long did it take you to get to this point?
It took a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the 2-week timeline that the neurologist had initially said at
right.
the first hospital right. wasn't quite accurate.
Right.
Yeah. It took quite a long time. And right now, so now it's almost 6 months out and I'm still I'm doing so much better, like truly doing
sure.
so much better, but still having the remnants of the pain and everything.
Mm-hmm. And what time frame did you return to your residency?
Yeah. So they let me take medical leave for like 3.5 months
okay.
or so, which was huge. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I am so eternally grateful for
right.
my residency to allow me to do that, because that was a big worry of mine as well. Like, what's going to happen? Will I be able to still finish
right.
my training
right.
and all of that, assuming I eventually hopefully do get better. And they were just like, don't even think about it, like focus on recovery
okay.
and we will figure it out afterwards.
Well,
so that was
good.
Really great.
That's
as well.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good. And did you ever consider any legal action or anything like that?
Yeah, a lot of my friends actually asked me about that too,
mm-hmm.
and my husband as well. And I was like, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, at this point, I just want to move forward
sure.
from it. Like, I
mm-hmm.
just don't want to be tied down by this.
Right.
And even though there are aspects that, like I was saying before, like the communication could have been better,
mm-hmm.
and I did feel like there were points where maybe things could have been done differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately, I'm sure that they were trying their best.
Right.
It's difficult. It's hard
yeah.
to
yeah.
talk about
yeah.
this type of stuff, especially since they didn't really know the answers.
Right.
And so I'm sure
right.
it was probably really hard for them to try to answer questions to answers or questions, sorry, answer questions mm-hmm. that they didn't even really truly know the answer for.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that was really, really difficult for them too. And like, obviously things like this can happen, complications
mm-hmm.
can happen, and
mm-hmm.
it can be out of people's control. I think in the future having better communication would have been helpful.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, what happened when you went to your postpartum checkup, or did you go to your postpartum checkup?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yeah. So I went to my postpartum checkup with my initial OB
mm-hmm.
who's in that same team
mm-hmm.
and kind of talked to her about everything that had happened, and then mentioned that I was now kind of converting a lot of my care to a different hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really empathetic about the whole situation for sure.
Right.
And yeah, I think that it was, I mean, it's tough for her too, because mm-hmm. I'm sure like she didn't know what happened either.
Right.
And so it's like hard right. to have a good conversation about it. Also,
right.
I think like maybe in retrospect, what could have been done differently is like when things don't go as planned or complications may arise, et cetera, we all know like within our training that what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to talk to the patient as much as what you do know, like
yeah.
answer as many questions as you can,
right.
or at least try to get to as many answers as you can so that we
right.
can move forward from it and
right.
learn from it and like
right.
be able to do things better
right.
or at least to try to treat what had happened.
Right.
And that kind of didn't feel like that took place sometimes
mm-hmm.
during my care. And that was what was really disheartening for me.
Sure.
But my OB did mention that they now have new protocols to make sure that things like this don't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And like they do a lot of repositioning
right.
and things like that too
right.
to kind of prevent these kind of compression injuries. I remember thinking to myself like, oh man, like, does it take someone to be paralyzed for this to happen? Like, I wonder why this wasn't already in place, but I am really happy that they were able to learn from this.
Gotcha. And we've talked a lot about how you have taken care of yourself physically.
Yeah.
How have you cared for yourself mentally?
Oh, man.
I don't want to project on you, but I think anybody could say that someone could experience birth trauma or feel like this was traumatic after this. So how have you taken care of yourself mentally?
Yeah. That's such an important question, because that's kind of what I am dealing with now too,
mm-hmm.
at this point, now that the function has gotten better. So I got in touch with an amazing therapist who kind of helped me come to terms with everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really easy to go down a route now where I just assume that, like having health anxiety, just like assume that things are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Like the rarest complication is going to now happen to me.
Right.
And I think it would have been very easy to go down that route, but the therapy that I had kind of helped prevent that. And it also, so on top of this complication, a whole bunch of other things happened to occur as
sure.
well. My parents were visiting and my dad had gone to a car accident, and then our apartment, like the ceiling was leaking. And, like there was just like so many other things
life
that happened.
Was just,
and I was just like
just hitting you left, right, and center.
Exactly. Like why not? Let's
right.
just add everything else.
Right.
And so I think what helped was realizing that even if these terrible things happened,
mm-hmm.
I'm so lucky to have such an amazing support system
right.
that can help me get through it.
Right.
And I think putting things in perspective like that was super duper helpful, like realizing the things that I do have and how grateful I am for that. And then also I would, every day I would think to myself, what's one really positive thing I can do
mm-hmm.
that will make me, I know will make me happy. And
gotcha.
I look forward to that.
Okay.
Yeah. That was something that I did as well. And like, and just being so happy and grateful that I have a healthy daughter.
Right.
Like that at
right.
the end of the day, that's like really the thing that mattered most to me.
Sure.
And so that was also a huge thing to keep in mind.
Gotcha. So, well, two questions as we wrap
yeah.
up. How do you think your experience has shaped the way you care for patients? And then has it changed the way you think about the way we approach birth and postpartum care in the US?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the first question, it absolutely has changed the way that I care for patients.
Mm-hmm.
Being able, you hope that you kind of understand
mm-hmm.
what your patients are going through, but then actually being able to go through that and like experiencing firsthand the different barriers that exist just to get physical or like get the different resources
right.
that everyone's telling me that you need
right.
or like that the patient needs. And I was really lucky to have the resources to be able to call the right people or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just imagining my patients who are not as technologically savvy or
mm-hmm.
like don't have those resources to be able to call, or ESL patients that have language barriers, like all these different things that my patients have to go through right. in order to just be able to care for themselves right. has definitely put things in perspective for me. Mm-hmm. And I think also it's very easy to kind of forget the concerns of what a patient might have and maybe think about cost effectiveness mm-hmm. or what other things that the OB may have been thinking about to decide the different medical decisions that they had made. And I really value, and I realize it's difficult, but it's just so important to have that patient-centered care mm-hmm. and like really try to focus on that as much as possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I think for your second question of what could be different in terms of prenatal, postnatal care, mm-hmm. when I gave birth, when I delivered, I already felt very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And like, I felt like, I mean, you're just so exhausted. You're like physically, mentally exhausted after right. everything that happened.
Right.
And I think if it was a very straightforward delivery, that would have been fine. Like, it's okay. I'd go home and right. I'd be able to take time and care with my baby. But for those moments when that isn't the case, making sure that the patient feels heard as much as possible, mm-hmm. because you already are feeling, you're feeling vulnerable. Like, you feel like you're already not able to fully maybe understand or voice or do the things that you normally would be able to do because right. you're in such an exhausted and mentally, right. like you're mentally, physically sure. exhausted. And sure. so I think that having that patient advocacy, like, a million times fold mm-hmm. for that reason mm-hmm. is going to be so important mm-hmm. in during that postpartum care. Yeah. And I think as a new mother too, like, you have a new perspective on things. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying before, like, I think before maybe I would have kind of just like allowed these things to pass over right. and like not ask the questions or not advocate for myself because right. I'd be like, yeah, it's fine. But now I have a baby to take care of as sure. well. So it's really important to try to advocate as much as possible on her behalf.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that as our final question, then what would that be your favorite piece of advice? What is your favorite piece of advice that you want to share to someone who's getting ready to have a baby?
Yeah. I think it is. I think it's that it's okay to like want to advocate for yourself, mm-hmm. especially now because you are taking care of not only yourself, but you're taking care of your baby. Sure. So it's okay to speak up and ask those questions. And yeah, it might make people uncomfortable or like it might make conversations that are really uncomfortable and difficult to have, but it's so important for your care and for your baby's care.
1,000%. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and share your story. This was really, really helpful. And I know someone is going to find it useful.
I really hope so. Yeah. And oh, sorry. There was actually one other thing I was going to mention. So when this was all happening, I'm pretty bedridden. I can't really do much of anything. Right. And so I was spending a lot of time on my phone, mm-hmm. which usually I don't recommend, but my husband actually found it, this one Facebook group uh-huh. that is stories very similar to this, where it was like compression nerve injuries.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, I wish there was more resources for this, because when I initially looked, I found like very, very rare one-off stories. Right. And then I'm like, oh, great. So nobody, like, I don't know what's going to happen because no one has ever written or talked about this.
Right.
And then I found this support group, this Facebook group, and I saw that there was several women who right. had very similar experiences as mine. And I think that just being able to know that there are other people who had experiences like this and were able to get through it and able to be themselves again, mm-hmm. I think was super duper helpful. And so if anyone were to have a similar injury as this, I do think, like, I'm more than happy to help share this group or whatever, just like be able to get that support
sure.
group so that they'd be able to get those resources.
Absolutely. And I guess, how can people connect with you, or if you want them to reach out to me and we can connect to you, or where can people connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a an X account, and I have Instagram and things like that too. And I'm happy to share them with you to put like on the poster, however would be helpful.
Yeah, we can do it. We can put it in the show notes for the episode.
Awesome.
Okay, well, perfect. Well, again, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you came on.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was really, really nice to be able to talk through this. So I really, really appreciate it. And I truly do hope that people who have similar injuries, or not even similar, like, just want to be able to connect and talk, I really hope that they feel comfortable to do that.
Wow, wasn't that a great episode? Super informative. I really appreciate Dr. Yu coming on to share her story. Now, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, which are my top takeaways from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's Notes from my conversation with Gina. Number one is we have a culture problem in medicine. It's just really not patient-centered. We're doing better and we're getting to a point where we're actually focusing on the patient first and then building our system around patients. But right now, it's just not a patient-centered experience. And this came to mind because of that experience of where her doctor was like, oh, I'm just going to write that this isn't an indicated test for this MRI. And that pushback and her wanting to get a test done to get answers, that's just so unnecessary and so reflective of the issues and culture problems that we have and some of the ego involved in medicine. Here she is having this really challenging and difficult situation occur. And she's being told like, well, I mean, this isn't something that you need to get done while she's trying to get answers. And we don't take a minute sometimes to step back and think and realize like nobody is going to make up or fake or exaggerate like not being able to walk after having a baby. Like, why would you do that? Especially someone who's particularly high functioning before that. So we just have a culture problem in medicine that we really have to work on so that we are truly providing patient-centered care. Okay, next is you have to be ready to advocate for yourself, period, full stop. That is the reality of giving birth in our U.S. healthcare system. That is actually the reality of getting healthcare period in the U.S. healthcare system. I wish it was not that way, but it is, okay? And hopefully you won't need to have to advocate for yourself, like something won't come up, but you don't know ahead of time when you might or might not have to really advocate for what you need to get the care that you want, whether that is in your birth or otherwise. And so the best way to be ready for that in the context of birth, again, is to educate yourself. You have got to do childbirth education so you know what to expect in the system. And you can be ready to speak up if need be. And ideally, you have someone with you who can advocate for you as well. So being ready to advocate for yourself is not an option. It's not a luxury. It is something that you absolutely must do. Again, period, full stop. All right, next up is I love how Gina used gratitude to deal with challenging times. There is abundant evidence, actually, that gratitude is a really helpful strategy. It actually works to help you deal with stress, to help you deal with issues that are coming up in your life. So just take a minute and be thankful for something. Sometimes I've tried gratitude practices before, I'll be honest, and sometimes it can be like, wait, what am I grateful for today? You know, I'm grateful for the sun that's shining. It's like you're stretching for something because you want to find something that's like, you know, big and amazing. But sometimes it can be small things like a good cup of coffee. Sometimes it can be like, you know, you got air conditioning. Sometimes, some days, maybe you're not feeling grateful, okay? But there is abundant evidence that gratitude can help with challenging times. So just try it. Focus on the things that are going well in your life, and it can help you really to feel better. Okay, so that is it for this episode. Please share this podcast with a friend. Also subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now. I so appreciate that. And leave me a review in Apple Podcasts. Those reviews are important to help the show grow, helps other women to find the show. And I love to hear what you think about the show. And do check out the Birth Preparation Course, my online childbirth education class that helps you advocate for yourself, takes that fear out of birth. Head to drnicolerankins.com/enroll and start feeling confident for your birth right now. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
It's Kelly Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.